Welcome to the Fear and Greed Daily Interview. I'm Sean Aylmer. We love talking about drones on this podcast, but I don't think we've ever talked about the security threat they pose. DroneShield is an ASX-listed company focusing on just that, producing counter-drone systems for the Australian Defence Force and customers in more than 100 countries right around the world. Oleg Vornik is the CEO of DroneShield and my guest this morning. Oleg, welcome to Fear and Greed.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
So we've talked about drones delivering pizzas and Walmart using them to deliver groceries, but there's a more sinister side to drones as well, from airports to prisons, places that aren't well set up to deal with the risk. Is that right?
That's right. Drones are an amazing technology that can do a lot of great things in the right hands, but also it can be seen as a, say, a $2,000 piece of equipment that you can freely buy from your local electronics store. And with it, you get multiple kilometers of high performance flight, ability to deliver payloads, a camera that can see quite a distance away. And in the wrong hands, that can present very interesting new challenges. Like, for example, when prisons were built, a lot of thought was given to ground perimeter security, but I think nobody really gave a lot of consideration about ability for flying objects to come over the prison walls and deliver contraband to inmates. Similar story for airports, where I remember in the beginning when FAA in the US used to throw frozen chickens into plane engines, trying to understand how well the planes would react to bird strikes. And when drones first came out, they wanted to do the same exercise, except Rolls-Royce, which was manufacturing the plane engines, halted the whole exercise saying, well, you'll just blow out the engines and you know, we don't want to do this whole thing. So drones in nefarious applications are now seen in warfare. So we've been seeing it well before Ukraine, where it's very much in the news now, but before that in Syria, in Armenia, Azerbaijan war and others, where they are a very interesting weapon where you can use them for battlefield surveillance, for potentially directing fires, for delivering payloads. There are lots of videos on social media now, Ukrainians, for example, dropping grenades into Russian tank hatches. So we're really seeing the field of drones expand really rapidly of all these uses, which drone manufacturers, I'm sure, had no idea about when the models were coming out.
Okay, so if we just, apart from the use in war and terrorism back home in Australia, is it most, I mean, really fascinating the idea that people would drop items to prisoners, for example, but is it mostly about surveillance? Is that what people, even if it's not surveillance, actually the video part of the drone is what most people who are using it for nefarious means are using?
It probably would be majority of the application, and it would be quite unsettling if you imagine a drone hovering outside your window, essentially filming you, and even if you're on a high-rise building or in a home and you don't know who's behind the drone, who's holding the controller. Most of our customers today are government customers, so they're concerned about drones coming into their facility, doing surveillance, and you never really know whether it's a child piloting a drone or whether there is more sinister intent. Airplanes, of course, to them, there is great danger of drones coming into contact with the windshield or the turbines. You have power stations being concerned about drones, where if you take one of those drones and drop them into a cooling stack, you'll have to shut down the power station for a couple of weeks, conduct check maintenance, which would be enormous inconvenience. And we've all seen the recent energy crisis, of course. So the applications are quite wide, even here domestically in Australia.
Okay, so how does a counter-drone system work, which is what DroneShield is all about?
Well, detection is step one. It's usually quite hard to know that the drone is coming. Like, for example, in a prison setting, if a drone is coming at night with lights out, it's actually quite quiet these days. There are a lot of very quiet drone models out there. Chances are you will simply not know. We, for example, been working with this prison which contacted us when they thought they were going to get about 2 drone flights a week. And once they installed our equipment, they realized it was more like 20 drone flights a week. And the problem was actually much bigger than they expected. So most of the time, you just don't know it's coming until you happen to be there just when drone is arriving. So detection sensors, which give you real-time detection, tracking of the drone, telling you what kind of drone it is, ability to do a slew to queue for the camera, so you have footage that you can use for investigation later. Bigger drone means bigger problem usually, so you can have your own internal procedures how to deal with different types of drones. So that is step one. Things get really interesting as the next step. So if you're on a battlefield, we would sell you one of our drone neutralization devices where you press the button and the drone basically comes down from the sky and lands. In more civilian domestic applications, that is often not legally possible, and unless you happen to be the Australian government. And even then, there are restrictions. So we would tell you where the drone pilot is, so you can send security and have a chat with the pilot or apprehend or arrest them. And say if you're in a prison setting, we also would continue tracking the drone and show you which inmate picks up the package. So really, depending on the situation, you'd have your next steps.
Stay with me, Oleg. We'll be back in a minute. I'm speaking to Oleg Vornik, CEO of DroneShield. How do you do it? No trade secrets here, Oleg. It's only tens of thousands of people listening. It's fine.
We've been tackling this problem for 7 years now. So we are the original counter-drone pioneer globally. And today we have about 40 engineers working on the task. The base layer of the system is a complex radio frequency detector, which essentially listens for the connection, the handshake between the drone and the controller. So the controller would send directions where to go to the drone, and the drone would respond by sending back the video that it sees from its camera and also its location. And we're able to essentially eavesdrop on both of those radio frequency encrypted communication protocols. And with that, we can pinpoint where the drone and the controller are. Additionally to that, we have other sensors like miniaturized radars. Traditional radars are not very good at detecting small plastic slow-moving objects flying close to the ground, like drones are. They've been developed more for detection of shiny, large objects like airplanes. So we're using very specialized miniaturized radars specifically designed for the task of detection and tracking of drones. And then we use cameras, plenty of great cameras out there. We don't make our own. Instead, we write software that we developed with UTS here in Sydney to have artificial intelligence-enabled computer vision, which takes the cue from one of the other sensors, uses the camera to lock on the drone and start tracking it. And then there is a sensor fusion engine behind it all that gives you a combined output on a essentially a screen that looks a bit like a maps engine that has dots floating around where drones are and flags where the controllers are. So it's quite a complex system, but it's pretty simple as far as the end user. The language we use is we developed our system for a distracted operator. So most of our users don't have drone tracking as their sole job. They do lots of other things, like, for example, tracking perimeter intrusions. So ability to detect drones needs to be almost running in the background and alerting the customer or our users when there's a drone coming up.
Okay. I mean, this opens up a whole box of issues from regulation to privacy to all sorts of things. And this is on both sides of drones and keeping an eye on those. Is Australia equipped to do this? I think this is really interesting what we're talking about here, Oleg, and what DroneShield is doing. You've developed this capability. Do we have the expertise? Because I'd imagine this is something that will expand hugely in coming years as more drones are used and the need for security is as high as ever. Does Australia have the ability and the intellectual capacity to keep doing this?
On the legal side of things, we're actually doing pretty well. So CASA, which is in charge of how you fly drones legally, has some of most advanced laws or legal framework in the world as to how you would fly drones and how you get the permits. The issue, of course, that we deal with as DroneShield is what happens when people break the law, whether it's deliberate or not. So we're talking about careless, clueless, and criminal in terms of people who are either careless when they know the rule, but they just tend to do what they want to do anyway. Clueless are people who don't read the rules. And of course, criminal are those who deliberately would do a terrorist attack or smuggling contraband into prisons. So that's on the drone side. On the counter-drone side, again, the legislation has been moving reasonably briskly. We have received the first license of its kind from ACMA that regulates Australian frequency, radio frequency waves, to develop, possess, and sell our drone neutralization devices. And we believe that we are the only company, the first and the only company in Australia yet to possess such license. And we are in active discussions with the government in terms of the framework going forward. And it's a very collaborative process. The other side to your question, I suppose, Sean, is the intellectual power to actually continue developing those systems from engineering point of view. So we have roughly doubled in size as a business over COVID in the last 2 years, went from about 30 to 60 people, including 40 engineers, all here in Sydney, as I mentioned, and the engineering team has roughly doubled in the last 2 years as well. It's very interesting where we're finding being in Australia in some ways is an advantage because you don't have to compete for talent with large tech conglomerates, the likes of Facebook or SpaceX or Tesla. And there's a lot of great talent here in Australia. I think an interesting challenge for us would be how, as a country, do we put out sufficient amount of graduates from universities, but also just as critically, once you release the graduates from the university, how do you create enough people in that 10 to 20 year bracket of really solid experience? And how do they get those first 10 or 20 years of experience to do some of those really complex projects? So for us, we have really gifted young guys and gals who are fresh out of university or 5 or 10 years out. And we're finding that is reasonably, I mean, it's always hard to find great talent, but reasonably easier than getting good talent of people who are in that sort of 10 to 20 year cohort out of university. And I think that's an interesting challenge.
Oleg, thank you for talking to Fear and Greed.
Pleasure.
That was Oleg Vornik, CEO of DroneShield. This is a Fear and Greed Daily Interview. Join us every morning for the full episode of Fear and Greed, Australia's most popular business podcast. I'm Sean Aylmer. Enjoy your day.